Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Jewish Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Nathan Abrams, the host of the channel. Today we'll be talking to Helene Myers about her new book, Movie Made Jews, An American Tradition. Helene Myers is a professor of English and McManus University chair at Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. She is the author of Femicidal Fears, Narratives of the Female Gothic Experience, Reading Michael Chabon, and Identity Papers, Contemporary Narratives of American Jewishness. Helene Myers, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nathan. Thanks so much for hosting me on the New Books Network. Delighted to be here.
Oh, well, it's great to have you. Helene, I wonder if you could begin the interview by telling us a bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I grew up in New York, Brooklyn, to be even more specific, where I had what I only now understand to be the luxury of taking Jewishness for granted. I've spent the past 30 some odd years in Texas, where I have certainly not had that luxury. So that means I very much consider myself a bicultural Jew. And my own experience has led me to be quite conscious about the geography of Jewish identity. It's also caused me to focus a great deal of attention in my scholarly work on intra-Jewish difference, and quite honestly, to look for narratives that heal rather than exacerbate religious and political fault lines within American Jewish communities. My first book was about femicide, the killing of women in contemporary literature, and specifically how those plots stage feminist debates about female victimization. After that, I turned my attention to American Jewish literature and film. So the joke in my household is that I went from murder to Menschlichkeit. I should also mention that in recent years, I've become really committed to writing beyond the academy. And so I write essays and reviews for publications such as Tablet, The Forward, Ms. Magazine blog, The Jewish Women's Archive, and Lilith Magazine. And that sort of public-facing scholarship is really important to me. So that gives you, that gives you a sense, just a bit about me.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So how did you come to write Movie Made Jews?
Well, Nathan, there are, I think, really two major origin stories to Movie Made Jews. The first is, I think, a quite common academic one. Movie Made Jews grew out of my previous book, which you mentioned in the introduction, titled Identity Papers, Contemporary Narratives of American Jewishness. That book was largely focused on the American Jewish literary renaissance, but I did manage to sneak a few films in there. Boaz Yakin's A Price Above Rubies, which is, I think, a really interesting flick about Jewish women's spirituality. And also Harvey Fierstein's Torch Song Trilogy, which is really a classic queer Jewish film that I think is really terrific despite its pernicious representation of the Jewish mother. As I was finishing Identity Papers and I started to teach a course titled Real Jews, R-E-E-L, I realized that I had much more to say about American Jewish movies. And, you know, doing some preliminary research for what ultimately became Movie Made Jews, I discovered that the American Jewish cinematic tradition is much richer and diverse than is generally recognized. So that's really one story of how Movie Made Jews came into being. But there's another origin story as well. I like to think that I have a pretty good sense of humor, but I'm also a serious cultural nerd and always have been. When I was a young feminist critic coming into my own, I found myself often appalled and incensed by the representation of women in films. And on occasion, people whom I otherwise really love and respect responded to my ire with some version of, "Lighten up, it's only a movie." And so in some ways, this book is a very particularist refutation of those fighting words. And I really do think of, you know, it's only a movie as fighting words. I take culture seriously because it both reflects and shapes how we think about ourselves and how we think about others. So the basic premise of my book, that movies help to make Jews, is just one of the many reasons that those who say it's just a movie are woefully misguided. And I'm trying to be tactful and charitable here. When I'm not in a professional setting, words more indelicate than misguided would be likely to come out of my South Brooklyn mouth.
Right, right. That's a very interesting premise that, you know, the idea that movies make Jews, hence the, you know, there's the Jews in the movies and then there's the Jews watching the movies, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's really important to say that when I first started writing this book, I was only paying attention to what was on screen. And of course, I think what appears on screen in the films I discuss is pretty great. However, as I started doing the research, I realized that the Jews that appeared on screen weren't the only Jews being made by these movies. Rather, directors and actors often talked about how making their Jewish movies impacted their own Jewish being and practice. And let me just give you a couple of examples. Making the Protocols of Zion caused director Mark Levin to rejoin a synagogue after years of being unaffiliated. Making 93 Queen, which is a film about the founding of a Hasidic women's EMT corps, gave Paula Eiselt permission to embrace rather than compartmentalize her identity as a modern Orthodox filmmaker. The actor Doris Roberts was thrilled to be a part of Keeping Up with the Steins because she felt the film was a breath of fresh Jewish air. And you know, the more research I did, the more I realized that Jews were clearly being made and remade during production. And then I realized that watching Jewish movies also makes Jews, that is, helps to shape viewers' sense of themselves as Jews. So watching a screening of Milk at a JCC in California allowed queer Jews to experience queer Jewish pride and to feel represented, even as they mourn the passing of an anti-gay marriage proposition. That's true, even though that milks Jewishness is really whitewashed in this otherwise stellar film. A Jewish feminist has her big mouth affirmed by Barbara Streisand. And wow, does that ever apply to me? For one critic, the work and joy of L'Adore Vidor from generation to generation is done via a family screening of Enemies, a Love Story. For some Jews, an annual Jewish film festival is a powerful communal ritual, like Passover or Rosh Hashanah. So when I invoke Movie Made Jews, I'm not only talking about the Jews on screen, but also those behind the scenes and those munching on popcorn in theaters or on their couches. Unanticipated research gold really led directly to the production and reception angle of the book. So absolutely, not just on the Movie Made Jews are not just those on the screen.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Do you have any kind of really famous examples of Jews who maybe remade themselves? I'm thinking of Steven Spielberg, perhaps with Schindler's List.
I gave you some, you know, examples. Though it's interesting that your question is famous, and you're absolutely right. Steven Spielberg really had, you know, really came to a sense of himself as a Jew in making Schindler's List. And what I would say is, I think not only came to more of a sense of his Jewishness, but also came to wrestle with the anti-Semitism that he had experienced in his youth. I don't do a lot with Spielberg in the book, but you know, quite frankly, I think that there are bits, you know, that you can begin to see parts of coded Jewishness in some of his earlier films, including and especially E.T. But that's for another day and probably another book.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, obviously a question I will ask, I might save it a bit later, is how you made your choices of what to include and not include in the book. Before I do that, perhaps you'd like to talk us through the structure of the book and how and why you decided to structure it that way.
Sure. Let me give you a little bit of an overview of the book, and then some things that I think make the book distinctive, which I think get to my decision-making process. I should say that from the outset, I was more interested in tracing and helping to shape an American Jewish cinematic tradition, rather than providing a survey of American Jewish cinema. Given that, I thought it important to organize the book thematically rather than chronologically. In the first half of the book, I focus on themes that are perhaps predictable, but are also profoundly important. For example, one of my early chapters is devoted to anti-Semitism films. Think Gentleman's Agreement and its 90s remake, School Ties, as well as Mark Levin's terrific documentary, Protocols of Zion. And I mentioned Protocols of Zion and Mark Levin as a director who really remade himself as a Jew, as because of making this documentary. That documentary is about anti-Semitism after 9/11, and really resonates with the situation in the States today, and you know, quite frankly, internationally. In the chapter titled "Looking at the Shoah from a Distance," I focus on films that indirectly represent the Holocaust and that I think usefully remind U.S. Jews that the Shoah happened elsewhere. And in that chapter, I talk about films like The Pawnbroker, Enemy's a Love Story, Crimes and Misdemeanors, and A Serious Man. Then there's a chapter, Assimilation and Its Discontents. That chapter treats films that represent the costs of assimilation, but also resistance to assimilation. And films like The Way We Were, Crossing Delancey, and Liberty Heights. You might remember that Liberty Heights ends with that wonderful scene where the young male protagonists crash a restricted swimming pool. They throw out a sign that reads, "No Jews, Dogs, and Coloreds." And then they use letters that they have imprinted on their chests to spell out the word Jew. It's really an incredible scene. And I thought fleetingly about having that scene be on the cover of the book, but there were permission difficulties, and actually I love the image that is on the cover. So that's the first half of the book, and as I said, I think that you know that those themes you would expect to see in any book on American Jewish cinema. In the second half of the book, I move beyond the themes that we might think of as the usual suspects. There's a chapter titled Assertively Jewish on Screen that includes films that, quite frankly, I think of as Jewy with a Vengeance. These films include Whatever Works, Fading Gigolo, Keeping Up with the Steins, and Wish I Was Here. And this group of films features Jews that range from the rabidly secular to the traditionally and, you know, not so traditionally observant. Then I have a chapter titled Queering the Jewish Gaze. And in that chapter, I focus on films that perform the intersectional challenges of being twice blessed. Those films range from Kissing Jessica Stein to Trembling Before God. In the Cinematic Alliances chapter, I chart a mini tradition of films that explore the possibilities and the challenges that attend not only white Jewish Black relations, but also relations between Muslims and Jews. And that seems to me the whole question of Muslim Jewish relations became, I think, much more important post 9/11. And then in the epilogue, I drive home my argument that American Jewish film history is a narrative of continuity and change by focusing on two very different 2018 feminist documentaries, 93 Queen and RBG. So that really gives you an overview of the book and you know how I structured it. I think maybe I should also mention two distinctive features of the book. And the first is, for diverse reasons, I decided early on that this book was going to include both fiction film and documentaries. And I also organize the book in such a way that you can either read it from start to finish and get a pretty sweeping narrative of American Jewish cinema, or you can consume it in smaller chunks, perhaps reading a section on a favorite film, reading about a film you've heard about but haven't yet seen. And if you do that, there will be spoiler alerts. Or reading about a film that you previously didn't know existed. And, you know, True Confessions, I organized it in those so that it was possible to consume it, the book, in small chunks. I really wanted and hope that the book provides a watch list for readers. As, you know, as a writer, I want to show readers new ways to view films they already know well. But I also want to introduce them to fabulous films that I think deserve to be much more widely known. So I hope that gives you and your listeners a brief taste of the book.
Yes, it does. Thank you. So would you like to talk about, I mean, you've mentioned some of the films you included, but would you like to talk a bit more about the choices you made, how you decided under the categories you mentioned which films to include and then which not to include, which is always a contentious decision in writing this kind of book, right?
Absolutely. And I think that in some ways, I think that's why so much of the work on Jewish cinema in general and American Jewish cinema in particular turns into surveys, because the question is, well, if I include this, how can I not include that? And everybody's going to be asking about that. And I pretty much decided that I was going to include, first of all, I was going to include films that I was invested in, often for very different reasons, but that I was invested in and that I thought were important, that they were aesthetically significant, that they were culturally significant, that they took us in new directions and some new territory. So I just basically, as I said, I wanted to trace a tradition, but I was also very conscious that I was helping to shape a tradition. And I was also conscious that, there was some books that there was a lot of discussion of and that people weren't going to miss much if I didn't include. So, I mentioned Schindler's List, but I didn't feel like I needed to do a full-blown reading of Schindler's List. And I mentioned Fiddler on the Roof and The Chosen and Yentl, but I didn't feel like I needed to have, a chunk of the book devoted to those films. And I should say that, Yentl is one of my favorite films, and leaving Yentl out was really hard for me. But I just thought, no, it's, not as necessary. So that's how I made some of those really hard decisions. And what I would say is, and, of course, both in talking to people just one-on-one and in being interviewed, invariably someone says, well, you didn't include this, so you didn't include that. And what I would say is, I hope that Movie Made Jews raises a whole set of questions about films. The specific set of films that I discuss, but I hope that people take those questions and those issues and those concerns and bring them to bear on their favorite films or their not so favorite films that aren't included in the book. And, you know, so that is my hope, that rather than be disappointed, that I give people some tools to bring to bear on other films and films that are, you know, and the films that either have come out since Movie Made Jews or that have yet to be made.
Okay. That's very interesting.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Your answer throws up a couple of questions that I have. I'll deal with them in turn. I think first, though, out of all the films that you wrote about, which is your favorite?
Nathan, that's an impossible question. It's akin to asking which of your kids is your favorite. And those of us who study Torah know that if you have a clear answer to that question, it's really not likely to go well for at least a part of the family, if not the whole mishpacha. But seriously, as I've already indicated, I'm fairly invested in all of the films that I include in the book, although for sometimes radically different reasons. So I'm not going to play favorites, but let me highlight just a few films here. The Way We Were has really held up, not only in terms of Katie's story, but also because it turns the Jewish woman's gaze on WASP culture and finds that culture wanting. I think that from my perspective, Hubble is passing as much or much more than Katie is. He's selling his creative soul to make a buck in Hollywood and then to do TV in New York. He's really attracted to the creative, ethical, and political standards that Katie represents. Yet they and she are ultimately too much for him. And that critique of dominant WASP masculinity makes this a really smart and radical film, even today. Similarly, in John Turturro's Fading Gigolo, one of the protagonists is a Haredi widow, Avigal, played by Vanessa Paradis. As Avigal is figuring out her own sensual spirituality, she refuses to be cowed by secular cosmopolitanism or Judaic patriarchy. At first, it seems as if this is yet another narrative of a repressed, imprisoned from woman. However, this film ends up suggesting that Haredi life has much to contribute to our thinking about ethics and erotic values. This twist is all the more precious when you take into account that none other than Woody Allen plays pimp to Turturro's gigolo. Crossing Delancey is so much smarter and subtle than many of its critics realize. And, you know, honestly, the reception history of that film as well as the reception history of Zach Braff's Wish I Was Here, definitely gets from me the, let me keep this clean, the WTF award. And let me also, let me give a shout out to Beth Cruvant's documentary, Heart of Stone, which is about white Jewish alums of a New Jersey high school who worked to support a visionary Black principal, Ron Stone. And Ron Stone recognized the vulnerability and the potential of young Black men who join gangs to protect themselves. And these white Jewish alums were really determined to support that vision and to give those young Black men an education that could at least approximate the education they had received at the same high school years ago. So I'm going to stop there, lest I cover the entire table of contents in answering your favorite movie question.
So if I said you'd definitely put I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry up there with Crossing Delancey, you're not going to be drawn.
No. Touché, Nathan. Okay, I will give you that Crossing Delancey is much higher on my list than I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
I know, I for one am glad that you've included both types of movies for what it's worth, because you know, all too often we can miss the significance in films that critics don't like, particularly Adam Sandler movies.
Right.
And they can have, they can have just as much to say.
That's exactly right. And actually, I mean, as you are well aware, some of my choices are some of my choices are so predictable and on the the usual suspects. I don't know anyone who would think that it was, you know, ridiculous to include a serious man in a book about American Jewish cinema. But there are a number of other films that I include that, you know, that were lambasted in the mainstream press, though they might have been taken seriously in the Jewish press. And then there are some that are lambasted in both the mainstream press and the Jewish press. But quite frankly, I thought that they were important for, you know, for particular reasons, and that I wasn't just going to go along with critical reception or with dominant critical reception, and you know that quite frankly, you know, that's my, you know, that's. That's my big writing mouth, and that's who I am as a, you know, that's who I am as a critic. I certainly do my homework, and I certainly think about what other people have said about these films, but I also trust myself as a viewer, a scholar, and a cultural critic.
It's interesting because if the film is hated by say the Jewish press, particularly the community professionals, then that really is an endorsement for me. But that's just my view on these movies.
Right. I think maybe we have some different relationships with community professionals. And just as all scholars are not alike, not all community professionals are alike.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. That's a fair, and I also live in a different country.
I actually was about to say that I think the community professional class in the U.S. is fairly diverse, and actually sometimes needs to pay more attention to inter-Jewish difference and honor and embrace it, rather than try to get rid of it.
Yeah, no, that's a valid point. One of the questions I wanted to ask about, I suppose, is methodology. I mean, you've talked through, you know, particularly in the beginning of our chat about how the, you know, you're interested about looking behind the screen, as it were. How do you feel that Jewish film studies has treated that perhaps, you know, and I include myself in this, we've tended just to look at what's on screen, and how your book has challenged the boundaries there.
Yeah, and you know, it's sort of really okay. Thanks so much for asking that, and I want to talk a little bit about how my book has challenged that boundary as well as another boundary. I think that, especially in terms of the more survey type books, I think for the most part, you know, we always get some tidbits of what happens behind the screen, but I don't, off screen, behind the scenes, but we don't get a lot of that, and we don't get it systematically. And I also don't think that we get a lot of serious reflection on what these films mean to different types of viewers. So the reception angle. What I would say is, I think in film studies more generally, there are plenty of studies of reception. And there are plenty of studies on, you know, production. I think, though, we tend to compartmentalize those studies. So it's either production, narrative, what's on screen, cinematography, reception. And quite frankly, that compartmentalization really bothered me. And so I was really determined to challenge it and to transgress those boundaries in writing Movie Made Jews. And I knew that there was some risks involved, but I thought that it was really neat. I thought that it was really needed. And so I went with it. The other boundary that I want to mention that initially I really didn't think of as transgressing, but I realized about halfway through the book I was, is including both documentaries and fiction film. I should tell you, I was about halfway through the book, and I was talking to a friend who's a film scholar whom I really respect. And that person, I want to be very careful here and not identify, that person said that I shouldn't mix documentaries and fiction films, and that simply isn't done. And actually, that person basically said, don't do it, and basically said, you can't do it. I'm halfway through this book, and I was pretty shook up. And I certainly talked to other people about that, you know, that decision. And ultimately, I decided that not only could it be done, but that it should be done, but that I also had a responsibility to explain the boundaries, but the porous boundaries between those forms of film. And that, you know, so I want us just to think about this. You know, documentaries make use of aesthetic features used in fiction films. Characters, narrative, narrator, sound. And fiction films are often historically informed or even historically based. Biopics are perhaps the most obvious example. In addition, at film festivals in general, and at Jewish film festivals in particular, not to mention streaming platforms, viewers experience both types of films. So it really makes sense for a book about the American Jewish tradition to include both. So I think both in terms of including, you know, behind the scenes and reception, but also in putting together documentaries and fiction films, I think that I've in some ways challenged, some of the ways we conceptualize traditions. And I did so ultimately, very intentionally, knowing that I was taking risks, but also quite frankly, feeling like it needed to be done and being willing to take those risks.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The other question that occurs to me, I mean, you've talked about the kind of history of the writing about Jews on film in the United States. To my mind, this still is a limited field. There aren't that, you know, like you said, there's just a few books and primarily surveys. Why do you think that is so? Or do you, if you feel that's a fair characterization?
Yeah, no, I think that, okay. So I think that, I don't want to say internalized anti-Semitism, but I think that there is an inferiority complex about American Jewry and therefore about American Jewish film. So I think that's part of what's going on. And I, you know, as someone who is both a literature and a film scholar and has written on American Jewish literature and film, it's amazing to me how much there's a sense of somehow American Jewish literature and film isn't good enough or isn't Jewish enough. You get into that whole, you know, too Jewish or not Jewish enough, whatever those terms mean. So I think that that's one issue. I also think that there's an issue of that people feel like there really isn't a tradition. That we, you know, that, you know, and I found this in sort of, you know, online commentaries. People who are really into film and are very serious about Jews and their own Jewishness would say, oh, well, you know, I, you know, can name all these films, but I can't, you know, I don't think that there's really a lot of good Jewish films. And, or I'm ashamed to say, I really can't come up with, you know, anything other than, you know, Woody Allen, who was obviously so problematic right now. And so that there's this sense of people not, and I think that this applies not only to general viewers, but also to scholars. There's a sense that there really isn't that much here. And what I would say is, you know, once I started doing the research, I thought, wow, is that wrong? And I also think that the survey model, you sort of include everything. And so then people, you know, so that there's almost too much and you get overwhelmed. So there's so much Jewishness that then, you know, there's almost anything sort of really more in depth gets lost. So I think, so, you know, I think that it's it's about, you know, so much that then there's, you know, it's everywhere, but nowhere in particular. It's a sense of, you know, a sense of American Jewish inferiority. And it's the, you know, it's the mistaken notion that there really isn't that much there. And some of those overlap and some of those contradict one another. But I think that they accumulate mean that people don't think that there's really enough material to write yet another book on American Jewish cinema.
Thank you. That's very interesting. Well, Helene, we've taken up a lot of your time, but before you go, would you like to tell us what you're working on now?
I have a couple of projects percolating that I'm not quite ready to talk about. I tend to write shorter essays and reviews as I figure out the shape of book projects. But let me talk briefly about two recent pieces that indirectly relate to movie-made Jews that might be of interest to listeners. Aftershock, which is a documentary by Paula Isalt and Tanya Lewis Lee about the epidemic of Black maternal mortality and what can be done to stop it, recently premiered at Sundance, and it's also going to be shown at South by Southwest. It's really terrific, and my review of it appears in Lilith. And you might remember that I mentioned Isalt. Her debut film was 93 Queen, which I discuss in the book. And she is clearly a director to watch. I also just wrote a piece about Therese Schechter's My So-Called Selfish Life. It's a really smart documentary about women who choose to remain child-free. And I wrote that piece for the Jewish Women's Archive. Interestingly enough, the J word is never used in the film, but there's a strong Jewish subtext throughout. And recently talking about movie-made Jews to a group at the Stephen Wise Temple in L.A., reminded me how much I love to do adult education. So I'm always happiest when my writing life and my life as an educator commingle. So, you know, that's what I'm up to these days.
Well, Helene, that sounds great. And we look forward to reading whatever you come up with next. And do let us know when that's ready for us to read, and we'll have you back on the show. But for now, I'd like to say thank you very much for being on the show today. I really enjoyed it, and take care.
Thank you, Nathan, for hosting, and really, really a pleasure to talk with you.